Welcome. My name is Chris Winter, and this is Sleep Unplugged. I've been thinking about and wanting to do a podcast about sleep for a very long time. A lot of people have said, you should do a podcast. It's fun to listen to you talk about sleep and relate your stories and experiences, but I thought, you know, other people will do it and they'll do it better. I don't know if I have the time for that sort of production of the podcast that it would require. And I recently had a conversation with my wife and my daughter, and my daughter said, you know, I'm listening to the podcast of this psychologist that I really like. He literally walks in the house, hangs up his car keys, lets his dogs out, and sits down and talks about what's on his mind in the field of psychology. So I guess I've been sort of overcomplicating the whole process, and I'm actually really excited to share this podcast with you. I'm almost 50. I'm at the halfway point of a career that I'll tell you about in a minute, and I feel like I'm just running out of time to get the messages and the information about sleep that I want to get out to the public in the way I want to. So that's what the mission statement of Sleep Unplugged is. It's to share with you fantastic information, myths, stories, anything related to sleep. We're going to talk about it on here. We'll try to keep the episodes between 30 to 50 minutes and have some guests on from time to time. But I'm just really excited to share this podcast with you. And I just really can't wait to get started because the ideas are aplenty. So let me talk to you about who I am. Again, my name is Dr. Chris Winter. I'm a neurologist and sleep specialist. And sleep specialist is an interesting term, particularly in 2022. I started working in sleep about 30 years ago, back in 1992, which is funny because my daughter, who produces the podcast, said to me, Dad, you don't need the slick production value. You can do the podcast like this guy I listen to because he's got 30 years experience in the field. So here we are, it's 2022, and I've reached the 30-year mark in terms of my experiences within sleep. To get started, I want to share a little bit about myself with you. I grew up in Salem, Virginia, in a sort of suburb of Roanoke, Virginia, down in the southwest part of Virginia. And I guess at some point, probably around the third grade, I decided I wanted to be a doctor. Although there's photographic evidence that I'll put on my Twitter feed that perhaps the interest in medicine started even earlier than that. But you know, when you grew up where I did, when you mentioned wanting to be a pastry chef, there's not a lot of attention from your family. And in my family, both of my parents were the first in theirs to go to college. They were both from West Virginia, in and around the Charleston, West Virginia area. When I would go visit my family, everyone was called either Mamaw or Papaw, Mamaw Clark, Papaw Saul, Mamaw Winter. Did you ever read the book Hillbilly Elegy? In it, there was a passage that said, if you refer to your grandparents as Mamaw and Papaw, you are hill people. I remember that line very distinctly. All my grandparents were wonderful people. And I remember when I would say things like I wanted to be a doctor to them, they'd get really excited, maybe produce a 50-cent piece and a piece of hard candy or something. So there's always been this kind of built-in reward system in my life for wanting to become a doctor. And so I was interested in the field, and I remember a third grade teacher gave me a book about human anatomy, and she said, look, I'm going to call your parents first to make sure that it's okay, because there were pictures of male and female bodies in it in various anatomical poses, so she wanted to make sure everyone was okay with me understanding what a cervix was before she handed me the book. I remember getting the book and being so fascinated by it. I love drawing pictures. I love memorizing the Latin names for muscles. I mean, the stuff that every kid who wants to be a doctor is drawn to must have been in that book. And it's strange in that when you want to become a doctor, you just have this sort of higher concept of what it is. You like bones and the way they fit together. I love tracing the pathway of the blood through your heart. But then you fast forward, and eventually I went to college at the University of Virginia, and you sort of arrive there, and you immediately see all these people around you that seem to already have a very clear educational path towards their goal, or at least it seemed that way to me. I was on this doctor path, but I didn't know what to do or even where to start. What classes do I take? You know, that sort of thing. So to figure it out, I went to my biology advisor. He was this guy named Rolf Benzinger, and he worked in the Department of Biology at the University of Virginia. The students that he advised were supposed to go and meet with him, and he would sit down with you and kind of guide you through your field of study and make that plan for the future. When I first met him, the guy looked like he was 100 years old. I walked into his lab, which is where he wanted to meet, and I'll never forget the first thing he said to me was something along the lines of, "You know, if you ever commit a crime, wear denim. Denim is very difficult to get evidence and semen out of." That was the first thing he said to me. And I thought, oh God, I've got a loon for an advisor. My whole plan of being a doctor is going to be derailed by this guy. But he was anything but a loon. The guy was brilliant and caring, thoughtful and eccentric. He said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "I want to be a doctor." And he said, "That's great." And with that, he gave me this big green binder, set it down right in front of me and said, "You know, there's a bunch of doctors around here who want young undergraduate students to help them with their research. Look through these because not only can you get valuable doctoring experience, but you can also get biology credit hours." And that sounded really good to me because I was one of the few people, it seemed, from my perception, that came into the University of Virginia with no credit hours. I mean, everybody from Northern Virginia and Richmond and different places in the DC area and Virginia Beach had all kinds of AP credits. My high school offered two AP classes and I took them, but I'm not entirely sure why I never took the AP exams that went along with them. Anyway, the credit hours seemed really appealing, so I was grabbing this binder from him and began looking through the ads. Nothing was terribly appealing, you know, sort of gel electrophoresis management or fruit fly investigation, this sort of thing. Some of the more interesting offers seemed to make it clear that my role would not be playing a particularly integral part in the research process, to put it bluntly. Then I turned a page and I remember my eye catching the phrase breast implants. And I thought, okay, we're getting warmer here. This is interesting. I kept reading the explanation of the research, and it referenced looking at breathing and sleep apnea in Yucatan micropigs and using the breast implants, which were off the market at the time, to insert into the necks of the thin pigs to give them sleep apnea. And I thought, this is fascinating. I read on and just started thinking about the idea of sleep being something you could research, and I was in. So I called up the investigator, a guy named Paul Surratt, who happened to be the director of the University of Virginia Sleep Center. So not only am I working with a doctor, I'm working with a doctor whose field of medicine I've never heard of before. I mean, I came to the university thinking of being a pediatrician or a surgeon or a dermatologist because I heard they had pretty nice lifestyles. So the whole idea of sleep was just crazy. I ended up working for Paul for years doing research and studies on those little pigs. And let me tell you, Yucatan micropigs are themselves full of stories. In fact, we'll do a whole show on how you get a very smart pig to wear a CPAP mask. I came up with an interesting way to do it that involved corn chips and lard, and that's the story for another day. Anyway, I did all this research in sleep with these Yucatan micropigs as an undergraduate. And when I graduated from the University of Virginia, I fortunately got into Emory University School of Medicine, went down to Atlanta. While I was there, I worked at the Emory Sleep Lab with Don Blywise and Dave Rye. They ran the neurology sleep lab down at Emory, and I worked with them for 4 years before coming back to the University of Virginia for my neurology residency. When I was down at Emory, I became really interested in neurology because of that lab was very neuro-based. I did some research for them and came back to the University of Virginia to do my internal medicine internship. And then the next 3 years, I was a neurology resident. During the last year of residency, I was made neurology chief with a guy named Mark. And that year, I had a really tough decision to make. Do I stay in sleep or sort of move on into something else related to neurology, stroke medicine, cognitive movement disorder, or just be a general neurologist? I decided to stay in sleep. At that point, I was like Damn, it's 2003, and I've been in this for 10 years now, give or take, and I don't really want to leave. I like sleep. I've met a lot of friends. In fact, Paul Surratt, the first guy I work with, bought me a membership to the Sleep Research Society, and I still have that membership. It was really important to me. I felt really excited that I belonged to this group as an undergrad. I mean, at this point, I didn't even know what a stethoscope was, and here I am belonging to the Sleep Research Society. It was big time. Over the years, I got a few papers published about the sleep research we did with the pigs, and it was all great. I didn't want to let it go after residency, so I did a sleep fellowship at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. However, right before I left for the fellowship, I got a call from a local physician who said, "Look, I'd love for you to join my neurology practice when you finish your fellowship. I think you should be their sleep lab director." I said, "I didn't even know the community hospital had a sleep center." And he said, "They don't, but you could put one together." I told this guy, "Look, I don't know. I haven't even begun my sleep fellowship yet. I've never put together a lab, let alone run it." And his words, to paraphrase, were basically, "I'll handle that." So I interviewed for the job of medical director of a sleep lab that didn't exist, that needed to be put together before my sleep fellowship, and I got it. I was installed like a puppet leader of a small nation. So now I was like, great, oh, I've got to put this lab together. So do you know the secret to putting a sleep lab together? It's copying everything from the labs that you've already worked in. I mean, I remember being at Chapel Hill doing my fellowship and sort of casually asking questions like, how would a doctor order a sleep study around here? And the staff would show me the forms that need to be filled out. And I would say, do you mind if I take a closer look at these forms? And I would, you know, sneak around to the copy room and white out the UNC logo and write in the name of my sleep center and photocopy it and give it back to them. I mean, to this day, there are elements of the forms we use at our sleep lab that are just blatantly plagiarized from Chapel Hill. I don't think that's breaking a law, but hopefully there's some statute of limitations there. At any rate, I set up this lab and then did my fellowship down at Chapel Hill and then moved back to Charlottesville for a third time to start working in this private neurology sleep clinic with this guy, the guy who got me installed, and separately be the medical director of this new sleep lab. That was in 2004. It's now 2022, and I still work in that same clinic. It's gone through some changes. That guy passed away a few years ago. He was an amazing man, but it's mostly the same. In terms of the sleep lab, I'm no longer the medical director there, but it still exists. It got bought up by a big hospital system, and we just did not see eye to eye about it. There's some really funny stories about the way I ended my tenure there as well, too, which we'll get into at a further date. In my clinic, I see adults and kids almost every day and help them with their sleep disorders, and I love it. I gave a lecture one time about sleep and told the audience I was a sleep specialist. When I was done, my wife, who had seen it, said, "You should probably have told them what a sleep specialist was, you know, what my credentials were." She said she had the impression from listening to the people in the audience that they thought I was some sort of energy crystal healer. Look, I've got no axe to grind with energy crystal healers. Maybe I'll need their services one day. But she said, "You know, you really need to let people know you're a real medical doctor and you have years and years of research and specialized training in sleep under some of the most brilliant sleep minds in the sleep world." So that's why I wanted to take you through my journey a little bit. I basically feel that I would be nothing were it not for my mentors, and I've had some amazing mentors in these three places, and I just wanted to share with you a little bit about them. So I'm approaching the age of 50. I think I'm getting ready to head down the back nine of my career, and so I think this is kind of the perfect point to do something like this podcast. When you're experienced and smart enough to put some episodes together, but also not on the other end where you just kind of rest on your laurels and think you know everything. The best thing about this field is that we are learning things about sleep at such a rapid rate. It's really difficult to keep up. One of the things that really fascinated me about sleep when I first got into it, I'll never forget, was walking in the hall and I made a comment about something related to sleep and research and travel or something. And Paul said, he turned around and said, you know, that's the best thing about sleep is that that question you've just asked has not been answered. He said, there's lots and lots of questions about sleep that have not been touched, unlike cardiology. And he said something like, I mean, the heart's, it's a pump. You can be a cardiologist if you want, but comparatively, there's not nearly as much new things to see in cardiology as there is asleep. Sleep is a real roller coaster. So that's me. 4 days out of the week, I see adults and kids and deal with their sleep disorders, and I'm really excited to share some of their stories and triumphs and mysteries and conundrums that we've encountered over the years, decades. Obviously, we won't mention patient names or do anything that would allow you to identify them, but there's lots and lots of value in talking about these cases, and we're seeing them every day. Every one of those days, I'm confronted with something I haven't quite seen before. So I look forward to talking about that in this podcast. I truly love seeing patients and helping to manage their sleep issues, helping to educate them, and ultimately hoping that they lead healthier lives because of it. In addition to patient care, I work with many professional sports organizations. Many years ago, I did some research about sleep and how it affected the travel of Major League Baseball players. The origin of that research happened when I was first working with, you guessed it, Paul Surratt. In fact, we were talking one day about how travel affected people and their sleep. And I said, I wonder if it affected sports teams. And he said, yeah, it probably does. That would be a great study. And I'll never forget, he turned around and walked right out of the room after he said that. Like, that would be a great study, but I don't have the time and interest in doing that right now. But that conversation always stuck in my head. And when I finished my fellowship and started working and had a little bit more control over my time, I did a pilot study just looking at how travel would affect Major League Baseball over one season and presented it. The study got some attention, including attention from Major League Baseball, who said, look, we'll fund you to look at that for 10 years. We did and found that traveling a player and that movement created its own advantages and disadvantages. And we'll talk more about that during a future episode of the show. But when I presented my findings, the 10-year findings at a conference in Colorado, it just so happened to be picked up by a local news team in Colorado. They said, a Virginia doctor has determined that Major League Baseball travel affects baseball performance. The news feature was totally local, you know, like Colorado Action Sports with Matt Johnson kind of thing. The unfortunate thing was they did this story about my research, but they never mentioned my name. And that was tragic because at the time, the San Francisco Giants were sitting in the lobby of a Colorado hotel getting ready to go to a field. And one of the individuals on the team, a guy named Ben Potenzianzo, saw this interview and just happened to be in that lobby and look up when it was playing. He did some legwork, thank goodness, and figured out who they were talking about. And he gave me a call. I was in clinic one day and he called me up and said, hey, my name is Ben and I work with the San Francisco Giants. We travel a lot and we are interested in your research. Can we talk? So long story short, I started working with the Giants. They won some World Series and then the phone really never stopped ringing after that. We started working with a lot of teams. I always say we. My wife always says, why do you always say we are working with a lot of teams? It's you. You started working with teams. I don't know. I just feel weird saying I, but I guess, yes, it's me. Anyway, I started working with a bunch of teams, and that's another aspect of what I do. So patient care to me is at the top of the pyramid, and that pairs really well with working with a lot of professional organizations and athletes to help their clubs with sleep. I just see it all as patient care. I mean, at the end of the day, the United States women's soccer team goalie is just a patient who has specific sleep needs and performance needs. And that's really what fascinates me, is this intersection of sleep and performance. I'm not really a huge sports fan, but I love the idea of an athletic organization as being some sort of laboratory Let's fix his or her sleep. Let's optimize their travel. And it was kind of, all right, let's sit around now and see what happens. Do they strike more people out? Do they run faster? So we'll do a podcast episode on sleep and performance. I find it just to be wildly fascinating and exciting. So that's another sort of segment of what we'll do. I've written two books. I love to write. And going through school, somebody asked me one time to give some pre-med students a piece of advice. And what would it be? Because the advice I got going through high school or even before that was do well in math and science. And take Latin, because I guess a lot of anatomical terms have Latin roots. So in case I come across a term or an organ I can't identify, maybe I could work its meaning out by its Latin derivation. I have no idea. Anyway, my answer to the individual about what advice would you give to somebody going into medicine or really any field is get comfortable with public speaking and work on your writing. The ironic thing is my mother is an English teacher, and I remember distinctly thinking, oh, if only you were a chemistry teacher, that would be so helpful, or worked in government so you could help me with my history and government class. It might have been really helpful for those types of classes that I was not quite as good in. And looking back, an English grammar teacher was an absolute gift because it was exactly what I needed. I spend so much time writing for media and writing books and trying to express myself clearly and in a way that's helpful to others. So I think that working on those skills is invaluable. We're nothing if we can't communicate. So I've written two books. One is called The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. And we'll do episodes on that as well. That book was written a few years ago. I thought, you know, I've got a lot of ideas I want to put into a podcast and a lot of ideas about sleep I want to get out there. And these are not necessarily ideas I see reflected in other media outlets or other writings. And so I just opened up a Microsoft Word document one day and just started writing and writing and writing. I would write when I would sit in an airport lounge. I would write on a flight, or I would write waiting for my daughter to finish up a ballet class. I would just pop out the laptop and write a little bit more on the topic that I had chosen. And eventually this file got to be massive. One day when I was at the office, a guy called me up and said, hey, I read something you wrote in a magazine. I think you should write a book. And I said, I did write a book. And he got a little quiet and sort of shy and said, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, doc. I looked you up. I thought, you know, I would have found your work, but I never really came across your book. And I said, oh, you'll never find my book because it lives hidden on my laptop. And he said, can you send it to me? And I sent him this raw, massive file, and he sold it. And that's how The Sleep Solution came to be. But like I said, we'll talk about that later. I wanted to call the book Shut Up and Sleep, but nobody would let me do it. That really upset me. So anyway, The Sleep Solution was the title we agreed upon. I've still never been thrilled with it, but I love the book. And I thought, you know, 10 people are going to buy copies, 8 of which are going to be bought by my mother. And it turned out to do really well, far exceeding my expectations of sales. I was just excited because I thought it could help a lot of people who struggle with their sleep. But, you know, a funny thing happens when you're a doctor, at least with me, and you write a book. I always feel a little icky telling people to buy it. Like, I'm working with a patient. It feels very wrong to say, I think you should buy my book. It would be really helpful to you, even though that's the whole purpose of why I wrote it. Anyway, after my first book, I'd always wanted to write a book about kids and their sleep. In fact, I talked to my editor about it, and her response was, really? Another book about kids and sleep? And I said, oh, really? What books are you referring to? Because in my view, there really aren't a lot of books about kids, teens, and their sleep disorders. And she said, you know, like Baby Wise and that kind of stuff. I said, no, those books are really about how to get your baby to sleep through the night or take a nap. And God knows we'll cover that because I've got a lot of things to say on that topic. I said, I'm talking about a book that talks about sleep from the time your child is born till they head off and pledge a fraternity and all the things that can go wrong with their sleep and the misdiagnoses and the missed diagnoses and the problems that people just don't think about because our parents aren't really informed about sleep. And our doctors don't really get that education in school. And there's really no expert to look at these older kids and say, hey, this problem you think they have with their mood or this problem you think they have with their attention might actually be a sleep problem. You know, right now I'm so excited because I'm leaving for Atlanta tomorrow to deliver a keynote to the National Association of School Nurses. And we get to talk about I get to talk to all the school nurses nationwide who are seeing these sleep disorders in kids every day. I'm very thrilled that through this book, The Rested Child, Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder and How to Help It, it came out a few months ago. I'm so excited about it to be able to talk about it in venues like with these nurses. I didn't want to call it The Rested Child. I toyed with a bunch of names. Arrested Development, which I thought was really cute. So imagine the word arrested in some color, but the word rest in the middle of it, you know, sort of is a different color. So it's Arrested Development. But anyway, they thought it would be too much like the TV show and the title. But I really wanted to capture the fact that I think this is a book that's not just for babies. It's for kids of all ages, including the moody teens that sit up in their room on their laptops and get mad when you come into their bedroom. I thought a great book title would be Tired AF, and that got vetoed so hard by my agent and my publisher. They said, look, you're a doctor. You cannot talk like that. So anyway, I'm very excited about it. If you have kids, I hope you'll check it out. So writing is another aspect of what I do. And then sort of media work with a company called Sleep.com that is really sort of a dedicated group trying to get the message about good sleep out there. We're working on sort of a show about how people who sleep in unusual places sleep and how we can learn from that. And I've done some podcast work through them. Sleep Unplugged, this podcast, however, is totally mine. And I get to be the director and the producer and talk about what I want. So this will be the real unfiltered Dr. Winter. That's the sort of preview of what you can expect in this podcast. And I really hope that you'll reach out to me through my social media, Dr. Chris Winter on Instagram, Dr. Chris Winter on Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter on TikTok, if you really want to go there. Although one of my favorite TikTok videos on there, my daughter made, who really is the one who's kind of getting me to do this. I was filming an ad for Swanwick, these blue blocker glasses. I like their glasses. Said, look, I'll help you to film a little endorsement for you. I was doing it here in my house. And I should say that at my house, the power goes off frequently. I can't believe we've recorded now for 28 minutes and the power hasn't gone out. Anyway, as I was filming this video, the power went out and I just kind of lost it. I was swearing a little bit and the video is rolling through the whole thing. And anyway, my daughter thought it'd be hilarious to post it. And I think today it's still by far and away my most popular TikTok video, whatever that means. So anyway, I hope you guys will reach out and throw out there some topics that you want to discuss within the field of sleep, things you want to hear about, because I've got a million ideas. I think sleep is an endless well of really interesting and topical, important things to discuss. Not just, I can't get my baby to sleep and I can't get myself to go to sleep, but you know, technology's out there. I mean, the explosion of technology right now is absolutely incredible. I remember when I was doing research as an undergrad, I needed a piece of equipment to take home to do it. And I was working with some pigs. I was going to take this device home to do some stuff, this big pulse oximeter. But before Paul gave it to me, he said, look, you need to be super careful with this because you do not have the money to replace this equipment. And it was a pulse oximeter. It was the size of a old typewriter. And you've got to, and you had, you know, the device and all the stuff, you had to stick it onto your finger. Now we can buy the entire pulse oximeter on Amazon for $15 and it just clips to into your finger. I mean, it's amazing the technology explosion. We were doing sleep studies back in the day on these polysomnographic pieces of equipment with pen and ink and paper everywhere. all that information, you would probably, you know, technology would fill the size of a closet. Now all that technology could fit literally on a watch right now. So technology would be a fun thing to talk about in the future. I want to talk about patient stories. I want to talk about research coming out. I want to talk about my opinions about things within sleep and things that are sleep adjacent. So I'm really excited for this platform. I can't believe we've already gone, 30 minutes, and here we are in episode one. So I hope you will follow this podcast. I don't think you'll be disappointed. I mean, I think that there's really nothing more we should be caring about right now than sleep. So if you think about your health, I think of it as sort of a stool with four pillars or four legs. We eat, and the things we put in our body, I think, are really important. You can put hydration in there. That's one leg. We need to exercise our bodies. How are you training your body to exercise? Sleep relates to that. Maybe that's another leg. I think, you know, mindfulness and meditation can be the third leg. I think sleep is the fourth. And so to have a truly foundational platform for your health, those four legs need to be taken care of. And I'm glad I'm doing this podcast now and not 20 years ago, because I really have come to understand a lot more about the relationship between meditation, mindfulness, and things of that nature and sleep. Whereas really in the past, I saw them as being very separate things. But, you know, the older I get, the more important I think about these types of things. It's like stretching. I would spend hours and hours when I was young in the gym and never stretched a muscle. And now, you know, I think there's not a lot that's more important than stretching. In fact, I feel like the phases of exercise within one's life are lift a whole bunch of weights when you're young. Then you move into the triathlon Spartan race situation where you're in that kind of next phase. And then it becomes stretching. Just get your lower back to loosen up a little bit. So anyway, there's eating, there's drinking, there's exercise and mindfulness, and sleep is that fourth pillar. And you can make a stool with three legs. You can cut one off, maybe skimp on one. But, you know, people have asked me, which of the four pillars do you think is most important? And I think it's probably sleep. I think it's the most important one. It's the one we have a lot of control and power over. And it's the one I feel we're getting the worst information about. So hopefully we can clear that up on Sleep Unplugged. I remember in medical school, I got a 1-hour lecture on sleep. And when the lecture was done, he said, man, there is nothing better and more interesting to talk about sleep and sex. And that was the end of his lecture. And I agree with that. Sleep is great. And I'm getting ready to do it in a few hours with a bunch of school nurses. And I can't wait. I hope that everybody listening to this feels the same way. So get in touch with the show. My social media handles again are Dr. Chris Winter on Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter Instagram. There's also Dr. Chris Winter on TikTok. I hope you'll reach out to me and give me some feedback. Give me some topics you'd like to cover. Once again, I want to plug the sleep solution, why your sleep's broken, how to fix it, as well as the rested child, why your tired, wired, or irritable child may have a sleep disorder and how to help. They're available on Amazon Kindle, Amazon paperback, Audible, wherever books and, you know, audiobooks are sold. Please rate and review the podcast. And by all means, please subscribe so we can have a lot more fun doing these in the future. Until then, this is Dr. Chris Winter. Thank you for listening to Sleep Unplugged. Until the next episode, sleep well.